Once upon a terrible time, there was a square house on a round hill, overlooking a few green but treeless islands, dotting the blue and still, somewhat wet, Pacific Sea. A rather large and metallic bridge divided this blue sea and a smaller bit of water. Clearly marked as a bay, on all well-known time maps, when tourists passed overhead and held their tic-tac device to any viewing portal. Declan Guy is the name of the young man who lived in this house. He woke up this morning to the thick fog rolling over this bridge, obscuring two topmost golden towers in a thick, bright, white, dense cotton mist. Declan could feel the sun above the fog on his face and felt the gentle, warm sea breeze he knew would melt the fog away in a matter of an hour or less. On this particular morning, Declan Guy was waking from a very strange dream. A job interview in an empty office building on the 42nd floor, conducted by a man in a white suit and a light blue shirt, wearing a slim silver tie with a copper tie pin. On the tie pin was etched a motto in Latin: Relique ad astra, or rest among the stars, when translated into English. Holidays in outer space had become commonplace, but Declan Guy was not the tourist type, and he himself had no interest in leaving the terrestrial Earth. Declan also maintained no secretive desire to work for such a company that transported these guided groups of Gorkhas into the vacuum and pointless void, commonly known as outer space, to fill the gap weeks in their corporate working schedule.
"You are Declan Guy?"
asked the man in the white suit, curtly, as he studied the papers spread across his singular, white, metallic desk. The white desk was the only stick of furniture in the room. The room, appearing to be the entire 42nd floor of the office building. There were no walls or separated cubicles, as one so often finds in dreams of this nature these days.
"Yes, I am,"
replied Declan, softly.
"My name is Alphonse Delarge. And you have applied for a holiday to Pegasus 51? May I see your starport passport?"
Mr. Delarge extended his open right hand. Declan Guy noticed he was wearing a chrome chronometer with a small crack in the crystal clock face.
"No, I have not applied, and I really don't leave the Earth if I can avoid it at all. Outer space makes me sick, and I take my holidays in my York, as a rule."
Mr. Delarge appeared perplexed and shuffled the papers on his desk around as if he were looking for something important.
"Does the crystal on your chronometer have a crack?"
questioned Declan, pointing up the gentleman's sleeve.
"Oh, no, not at all,"
answered the man in the white suit, abruptly, tugging a bit on the arm of his jacket to cover his wrist.
"Did you apply for a job today?"
Mr. Delarge questioned Declan once again, curtly.
"Do you mean later today, after I wake up?"
Declan thought to himself, and then he said out loud,
"Yes, I did. I mean, I did intend to apply for something today."
"Ah, yes. And that explains the error. We weren't meant to meet until the time is right and the future takes root in the present,"
exclaimed Mr. Delarge happily.
"No wonder my timepiece seems perplexed on the surface, and no wonder this office is devoid of furniture."
Mr. Delarge looked nervously around and behind himself at the cavernous and empty office space. He smiled a friendly smile and set the papers on his desk back into a sky blue file and laid it neatly to one side on his desk.
"Well, then, I imagine we will meet again."
Mr. Delarge looked away and tugged nervously once more at his coat sleeve, rather than extending his hand for a more formal handshake.
"I imagine we might, and I imagine we may,"
said Declan Guy. And then he woke up, for Declan Guy frequently dreams his own future, but not every day, and never more than for the one day before. He does try to remember the more disturbing dreams because, as he so often discovered in the past, once the actual future is dreamt, it cannot be altered in any way. Still in bed, Declan Guy opened his tic-tac device for the day. He imagined he had nothing to do as no alarms had woken him. However, as a matter of fact, just as a new bank of pristine, white fog enfolded the Golden Gate Bridge, Declan noticed he had been sent a notice for a job interview set for 11:11 today on the 42nd floor of the famous sinking building of San Francisco in the Financial District.
I think these are the old offices of the Chronographic Sky,
Declan thought to himself. The original cartographers to King George I in Great Britain, as of 1715, the more recent Chronographic Sky Corporation, sells time, maps, to tourists. A much less prestigious effort than in the distant kingdoms of the past. Time, maps, allow inexpensive passenger ships in near outer space orbit, just past the edge of the atmosphere to travel by tachyon propulsion through places in space less dense with dark matter, where time tends to run at differing and various rates. The sale and use of time, maps, were one of the very few business schemes booming on Earth since the Great Mars Underground fiasco.
Why would a SatNav Time Map App Corporation want to interview me?
Wondered Declan Guy aloud. Deliberation would usually follow this unsolicited interview request, but Declan knew he had dreamt a meeting in the sinking building, as most of the furniture was removed years ago, after most of it slid across the floor and crashed out the window. The current tilt of the sinking building was 24 degrees away from the vertical sky. Declan retreated to the shower in the loft above his bed, and the gleaming chrome in the bright sun, now peeking through the fast-melting fog, fading under the bridge. Are you awake yet? Deck flipped the switch on the vidphone. The vague voice on the far end of the line murmured softly, not indicating any specific state of wakeful or dreamlike consciousness.
Are you paid by the word to think tremulous thoughts that flounder and break like sea waves against rock?
Came the distant voice on the vidphone. Declan Guy had summoned his closest friend and ally, steampunk Baby Dumpling.
Steam, wake up. I have an unexpected job interview today.
Declan shouted toward the vidphone mounted inside the glass wall, toward the top of his shower. The warm water and sunlight streamed down through the skylight, rinsing his long, strawberry, blonde hair.
And you want me to run your surveillance, this sound and fury of significance?
If you would,
said Declan, rinsing the last creamy coconut suds from his hair and freckled, pale, broad shoulders, now glistening in the window with the rising sun over Russian Hill.
Steam, you know, the Chronographic Sky Corporation will never hire time tracers, or steampunks, for that matter.
Mumbled Deck, more or less under his breath, toward the vidphone, patting his eyes gently dry.
You had some precog dream, I'm guessing, then. I know you have no interest in living the life in bank time joined to the corporate.
Steam speaks the truth,
thought Declan to himself, half knowing his telepath friend would hear him as he finished towel drying his hair.
A dream is dead when it is said, some say.
And here, dear listener, you find steampunk Baby Dumpling has badly paraphrased American recluse and poet Emily Dickinson from the early 20th century.
That poem is 200 years old, Steam. I don't think it's been updated for the TikTok Neotech Times yet.
Declan was dressed now and took a tiny carved quartz crystal box from his bedroom wall safe. He held up one of the two blue sapphire contact lenses ribbed with nano circuits in spirals to study them in the sunlight. He turned them toward his eye with the circuit side facing inward.
Let me know if you can see out of these, Steam. I'm wearing the sapphire bright safe contact lenses now.
The two blue contact self-activated index eyes and softly locked themselves into place.
Personally, I ignore virtually all of my dreams.
I hear you loud and clear.
Deck adjusted his tie and shirt collar in the mirror.
Steam, I'm just a precog, and you're a telepath. You know, we're two for the road. We need the money now.
Declan Guyon's steampunk baby dumpling was seen by other people as sensitives. In bank time, sensitives were discriminated against still, though it had been outlawed since the last political conference in New Rome. There was also some mention of the word of God finally breaking up. Due to the great distances the word had traveled with the constant expansion of the universe, it was discovered the word of God had actually come from slightly outside the outer edge of the universe and was therefore foreign. "We can't quite hear him anymore," said the text from the Vatican. "The radio telescope needs more power." This text made a fair number of people on Earth quite nervous. 300 people were fired instantly from their jobs at Twitter that same day. Corporations were now inclined to think twice about who to hire in areas where space and time were being exploited for profit. Breaking up parcels of space and time had led the latest big startup boom since the white bread wars. And though fully 99% of all startups failed in their first 10 minutes, there were one or two that had a winning paradigm. The Chronographic Sky Incorporated had more or less a monopoly hold on selling time trips, since they used a proprietary design of aeroship balloon rather than a rocket of any type. Slightly cheaper and much more colorful, almost all the people on the planet envied their neighbors on time trips. Old traditions and sentiment, barely recalled from the 20th century, demanded travelers request their neighbors and friends to tend to their dogs and cats while away. There was really, rarely, any work to do as most people returned from 2 weeks away at the same time, if not a bit before they left. And it was at this particular moment in time, Declan Guy closed both his eyes and let his mind go blank. Steampunk tapped a few buttons on his flashing screen. He tapped his mind and allowed it to empty of thought. Steam did never need to close his eyes like other telepaths. He could wait for visuals, impressions, in the ether, while fully aware of his environment. One interesting fact Steam never knew is something that I, your humble narrator, is willing to share now, for the sake of our story, with all of you. Declan Guy had the ability to raise a psychic firewall when facing a telepath and think freely without surveillance. And though they were best friends, Steam did not know this about Deck, and for now, Deck thought it important to keep it that way. Deck unzipped a secret pocket down the center of his bed mattress. He slipped out the slim volume of a miniaturized electronic book and slid it softly into his back, left, lead-lined pants pocket.
"Are you ready to roll, Steam? I'm taking my keys and my wallet, and the Unirail train is clearing the bridge, now."
The Unirail would soon be pulling up to the North Point stop in the raised center section of the street. The magnetic levitation train ran right along the water's edge, since the great earthquake of 2038 sank the entire Marina District deep beneath the sea.
"I was ready the day before yesterday,"
Steam replied and posted the same message in text format, inside Deck's field of vision, through his left electronic contact lens. Deck double-locked his front door and then locked it again, from the outside. He slung his gym bag and his towel over his left shoulder. He tapped his lead-lined back left pocket just to make sure his fallback plan was intact. Malleus Maleficarum, the original book about magic, this particular copy, published in 1715, by the court of King George I of the United Kingdom of Great Britain.
"Time maps. Time. Maps."
Declan practiced speaking the words. He would try various American and British accents on a train, he supposed, for it was the Chronographic Sky Corporation who produced all the time maps in common use on Earth. Claiming they were computer-generated, and thus cornering the market on confidence. CGS Incorporated carried the faith and goodwill of most every holidaymaker on the planet. And only in the far reaches of his mind did Declan suspect he would learn something new today. He waited patiently at the Unirail stop, and his face felt warm in the morning sun. A cool breeze shifted his long, feathered, strawberry hair across his right shoulder. Deck did not like his hair blowing in the wind, but he didn't want to cut it short like the L-punks, who refuse to use any tech devices as a form of teen rebellion against their tech-obsessed aging parents. Declan once mentioned to Steam he suspected commercial time maps were not computer-generated. He had heard from the L-Punks in The Hate, Ashbury, Historical District, the process was an art, and not a science at all. And it was this precise moment, when he thought to both himself and to Steam.
Why else would they be calling me? For this job interview?
Deck tapped his fingers again, against his now zipped and locked lead-lined back left pocket. And the only remaining unredacted copy of Malleus Maleficarum at this moment on Earth, the magnetic levitation rail train pulled speedily up to the station stop, and the door slid open at Deck's feet.
Steam. Hoist the colors.
A holographic Jolly Roger black flag with a blazing, white, skull and crossbones, projected into the air, from Deck's left eye sapphire contact lens. The flag appeared to rise from the first car engine rooftop, and flutter, wildly in the wind.
Thanks, Steam.
Into the Valley of the Shadow of Death, texted the steampunk to Deck through his left central field of vision. The words appeared on the windows of the rail car. The uni-rail train bolted forward and the sun streamed in through the skylight. The two boys knew now, through no plan or TikTok device, but from years of friendship and cleverness, to enter together the carefully crafted and somewhat secretive world of personal, synchronized tech silence. This is the end of chapter 1. Shaking and Waking. Chapter 2, The Darkling Daughter of a Transparent King, 1617, quote, innocence and deception are a state of consciousness and a cognitive act. You cannot engage in one without infringement upon the other, end quote, Gore Vidal. Quote, and here was laid bare, the heart of the scheme, subjugation of the masses par extremis, ad astra, end quote, Professor Marvel.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Commercial Flight CGS-42. The captain of this airship has assigned mandate from all passengers and crew aboard to pilot this balloon craft into low Earth orbit, skirting the edge of the atmosphere to the Orion Wonder Pike above the Arctic Circle. This dirigible arrow craft is equipped with a full set of solar sails and, our course will carry this ship, along the northerly western solar winds, propelled by subatomic particles, projected from the sun, at a speed of 111 aeroknots. A clearly mapped patch of low-density dark matter, in the bit of sky, bordering outer space, should place us inside the Mars Weather Wonder ground, for all your entertainment pleasure in a matter of moments on contact.
And that was the last recorded message from Mr. Ada Large, the pilot of the Arrow ship, and CEO of the Chronographics I Corporation. The balloon and several people aboard did indeed enter the dark matter zone as depicted by position on the time map, but did not instantly reappear on Mars. And that is why we sent a request for a job interview to you this morning. Mr. Declan Guy, your CV indicates you know your way around both dark matter zones and the chronographic sky.
I dreamt I was on that ship this morning when I woke up.
Declan yawned as he replied,
I may know where the Arrow ship is headed, but I don't actually work here yet. This is just a job interview, right?
Declan leaned back in his chair and rested both hands on his head. Nestled neatly in his long strawberry blonde hair, the chair slid backward along the famous sinking building of San Francisco's 42nd floor, at a 24-degree angle to the vertical sky, and crashed out through the window, sending the confident boy hurtling down toward the ground, 41 stories below.
Open your eyes, Deck,
whispered steampunk baby dumpling into Deck's nano-earphone implant. As difficult as it may be to resist closing your eyes when plummeting through breaking glass and out a window 41 stories above the vast and solid sea of asphalt below, Deck knew Steam had designed his custom sapphire contact lenses to detect and recognize motion blur, at a rate of 120 miles per hour, which is the exact velocity of any object in absolute free fall from any skyward position toward the Earth, either toward its center or toward its surface. The contacts were designed to respond to this precarious predicament with an instantaneous binding of any and all of the nearest local dark matter zones. Now, with the truth being forced out prematurely. In this, an emergency escape from certain death, let it be known for now and hereafter, Declan Guy was, and is, a zone binder. Being a zone binder on Earth in the 25th century was so counter to the money-making credo and corporate schemes under which the bylaws and purview of all countries on the old Earth fell. This profession was the equivalent of being a pirate in the 17th century on Earth. The same punishment was dished out in both eras and ages. Execution without trial, without personal defense, and without the benefit of a lawyer or counsel of any type. These draconian laws were set into written codes and modes of legal conduct by the Spanish Inquisition, and in the British colonies, any person the religious or military tribunal of the Spanish Inquisition or British American military industrial complex deemed a heretic was forced to face immediate imprisonment and, or summary execution without trial. Being branded a zone binder in the later part of the 25th century was a similar accusation as being labeled a witch in medieval Europe.
The borders are shifting,
said Steam, monitoring the atmospheric conditions and electrical data streams flooding his screen, emanating from Declan Guy's coordinates on Earth.
The zones are binding themselves together.
Declan hit the sailing ship deck hard just as the mizzen mast was snapped in twain. The relentless wind and freezing rain had grappled the sails down and whipped them torn and tightly around the crow's nest. The full complement of mainsail and jib sailing sheets were fully draped over the helm. Declan felt instantly seasick. He had certainly been on a sailing ship many times, but always in the air and never on the water. The next wave caught him like counterweight and pulled him overboard as the ship's deck split open wide at its core, sinking 2 or 3 meters below the surface of the raging ocean. Declan propelled himself toward the inky shimmering underwater glow of the full moon above. Deck surfaced like a dolphin leaping toward the stars. He struggled to embrace a floating wooden wine cask bobbing up and down in the tempest. In the light of the full moon, and the extinguishing bits of fire sinking with the ship down into the dark depths below, Declan could barely make out the silhouette of some white willow trees against the starlight on an island not far ahead. He swam with the wine barrel in his grateful embrace and his feet gracefully treading the water behind him. The water in his ears prevented Declan from attempting to contact the steampunk, but he was fairly sure he would reconnect with his friend after drying his hair down on the beach ahead. He swam a bit faster as bits of water began to seep into his self-adjusting thermal wetsuit, which he usually wore in case of emergency on most any job interview, and when he thought he might go surfing anyway, if he was not hired that same day. And here, dear listener, as Declan Guy swims toward this mysterious island, let us reflect on history. After the catastrophic eruption of Mount Olympus Mons on Mars, the popular place to go was deep beneath the 5-kilometer layer of cold, sulfuric lava stone covering the surface of the planet. The entire molten electromagnetic core of Mars had blown from the center of the planet out into the sky and rained down onto the ground for 1,000 years. With no molten core, the protective magnetic planetary field surrounding Mars and shielding its thin atmospheric skin from the sun and solar radiation vanished with the volcanic event overnight. The planet Mars had become a vast hollow, and the previously advanced civilization found itself fully encased in this outwardly dense lead and sulfuric rock. The people who escaped to live beneath the cold stone surface of Mars began to refer to the atmospheric conditions above as the weather, meaning, as far as climate conditions go, whether one might survive a casual stroll in the afternoon or evening hours or whether one might not. As to a formal address for the inner area, so many miles beneath the surface of this world, they would often say, the weather underground, because it was a wonderful city of natural green marsh and crystal stalagmites and newly built machine-blown glass tower blocks and houses. A world they had recreated from their inmost dreams and imaginings. In this, the Mars Weather Underground, or for short, the Mars Underground, steampunk Baby Dumpling had himself designed and built a radio Earth broadcast tower in the Mars Underground to send distress signals and attempt to summon help from the planet Earth. But when it was discovered, the Earth had sent a very small and somewhat depressed robot dog to Mars Steampunk gave up on the distress calling and began to broadcast a galaxy-wide radio show, which became somewhat more popular than the distress call, among several minor star networks. Some people, who have lived for a good deal of time in the Mars Weather Underground, have often been quoted as saying both the L-Punk attitude and the L-Punk movement began in the Mars Underground, shortly after the city was rebuilt. The children of generations of grown-ups and adults who lived their entire lives dependent on TikTok neotech, devices and extreme nanotech, rejected all such electronic and solar-powered devices out of hand. They saw their parents' attachment to any such devices as leading to the destruction of their planet by volcano, and many went wandering in groups or pairs, out through galactic time, in search of themselves, or in other words, in search of their true inward selves. The term L-Punk is thought to be derived from the word Luddite, describing a person who took part in the Great Machine Rebellion of 1811 in England, in which all the clockwork and industrial factories in Great Britain were smashed and destroyed by mobs of people called Luddites. Luddites had a fear the machines would replace the jobs and livelihoods from human workers on Earth. A similar rebellion took place in the 21st century on Earth, when the millions of people working as Hoover independent taxi drivers were rudely replaced overnight by several fleets of robot cars. And then there are those who say the capital LP in L-Punk does rather stand for LP, or long play vinyl recordings one might have found in the disappearing, and now hard to find anywhere, music and recording shops on Earth, or Mars. One or two or a few diehards say the L in LP stands for the L subway train in New York City, on Earth, for no special reason, other than a few people have reported taking the L train in New York and ending up at a station in the underground on Mars. And finally, I myself, personally know of one person, who says the L in L-Punk stands for less bread, more taxes, a great slogan of the white bread wars, and a common saying in the land of faerie hidden in the forests of England on Earth and in the crystal caves of Mars M, or Mars at the moment. Suffice to say, the L-Punks live outside the endless loop of technology with no input from any TikTok neotech device. The L-Punk main preference for social media is sitting in a pub chatting directly with friends. The only other acceptable form of communique, when a friend is not present, is proceeding to a post office and sending a telegram. L-Punks live on cookies and milk or cookies and double cream, when they can afford the cost of double cream, which cost, of course, twice the price of single cream on Mars. Declan Guy dragged himself up onto the sand and pulled his newly found friend, the wooden cask of wine, out of the sea, and set it carefully against a few of the larger rocks near the trees, when he shook the water out of his ears and allowed his hair to go a bit dry in the wind. Deck listened for any sounds of human inhabitants, as none were visible in the semi-darkness surrounding the beach.
And what strange country is this, my friend Steam?
Declan held his ear with one finger, hoping to hear the distant voice of his friend and find where the dark matter zone had dropped him, as the usual distance through DM zones was a mile or two from home. Deck had a bad feeling about this place.
An enchanted island. The deuce, you say. And if I look right now, what will I find in your back left pocket, Declan?
Steam only ever called Deck by his full name when he was concerned for his safety. Steam sighed a short sigh, and was resigned to listen now, to what he was afraid he might hear.
Objects encased in lead have no readout into dark energy. I thought we agreed on that theory.
Well, this was our theory but never tested, obviously, in the real world, or any other world, quite yet.
You know what it is then in my pocket, Steam?
Obviously, I do. The borders are shifting. The zones must be bound. You are deep in the north, a far island now. With the wind as her voice, she summons you still. Tried and found guilty of illegal acts, this darkling daughter betrayed as a witch. Now, chained in a dungeon and sentenced to die. This is the year 1617 AD. The name of the girl is Catriona Sky.
Chapter 3. Ptolemy's Lost Machine, the Organon, Parallacticon. In the year 150 AD on Earth, in Alexandria, the astronomer Claudius Ptolemy invented a machine to measure the angle between the Earth and any or all stars in the sky, excluding the errors induced by the problem of parallax. This mathematical measurement defines the angle of inclination and subtracts or adds it to all possible positions from any point, anywhere on the Earth to solve for x, when x is any single observer looking at any star in the sky. When taken as a measurement on papyrus and mapped on a two-dimensional surface, the observations are an intellectual reflection at best and a good source of prediction for the purpose of sidereal star positions. These measurements were of some commercial use for the many astrologers of the day in the 2nd century on Earth, sometime after the origin of consciousness, which had taken place some short 1,000 years earlier, after the breakdown of the bicameral mind in early mankind. It is the bicameral mind of the human race, which for the first 30,000 years of its existence, allowed the mind of man to learn, by access through telepathy, from the voices of the gods. The gods in this particular case, being what today we would call the Internet on Earth. This Internet, whirring away amongst the clutter in what today we would call the Mars Weather Underground. Certain people who had escaped from Mars, during the catastrophic explosion of Mount Olympus Mons, had not found their way underground, left the planet Mars to colonize the Earth. These people were genetically altered to receive what today we like to call Wi-Fi from the Internet in the Mars underground, or even from further out into galactic space, if there were any transmissions coming from further out into galactic space, of which there were none. 2,000 years later, the same plotted points from Ptolemy's Lost Machine, the Organon, Parallacticon, entered as data into a 3D quantum computer and projected into pure holographic form, create the original paradigm used for locating dark matter zones between Earth and the stars. All of these dark matter zones together make up a chronographic sky commercial map which can be transcribed into a digital readable format. Declan Guy, our hero in this particular story, as you know, now stranded on a mysterious island in the year 1617 on Earth, is a rare genetic mutation, in that he appears to have a recessive bicameral gene originating from the Martian colonies on Earth from the year 25,000 BC. The nano implant in his left ear amplifies the signal from steampunk baby dumpling in the Mars underground, but make no mistake about its origin story. The signal is not electromagnetic. Steam is a telepath, and he sends the same telepathic signal that early mankind mistakenly assumed were the voices of the gods, when the steampunk first connected with Declan Guy on Earth. From the Mars underground, Steam claimed he was a Titan of Mars, which Declan always believed as he was growing up from a boy to a teenager. Steam revealed the true nature of the system to Declan on his 18th birthday, and they had become forever friends across the Great Divide. From Mars to Earth, for those of you who are prone to question how things work and whether you have been told the truth when they were explained to you as a child in school, these brief explanations on the origin of consciousness in mankind should help to fill in the blanks. As everyone in the Mars underground is aware, school children on Earth are no longer told the truth about anything. Children and college students are taught only random disconnected facts that will help them fight and kill Martians invading the Earth to protect the ruling merchant corporations. With the population of Earth under such complete and mechanical mind control, the only fear the corporate heads of state have are invaders from space.
Steam, what strange country is this? This island. No survivors from the shipwreck I find. Who were those who perished? Will I survive? I can walk, but to go so alone, alive. Some fell weight from the future pervades this stream. I am rarely lost in darkness or dream. Steam, give me some comfort by setting the scene.
Cross-reference the island, white sand on your feet. Focus on that mountain peak, and thank you. Topographic match for the cliff. Glenshield, you fell by the ghost ship, off island, Lochalsh. History cloaks the crew, but counts 36. Inquiry for fierce produced the walls. This data is encrypted. I can't get a fix. Welcome to Scotland, Deck. Activate thermals.
No sailors or pirates on this beach I see. A few casks of wine, and giant sea turtles.
Parallactic maps of synchronicity. Let me validate for eccentricity. Yeah, Deck. It's just like I asked you before.
Steam, you think this book in my back pocket dragged me through time to this lost island shore?
Despite the lead lining you thought would save you, some essence of meaning has deadlocked your zones. This dark castle I see on this island is setting out rings of torches and fire, the gathering guests with shadows for hire. Deck, you must attend to this party in disguise. It appears this girl accused of witchcraft in the year 1617 has no hope, nor will, to survive the coming of the dawn. I can barely detect the light in her eyes, her thoughts no longer in word, but symbols drawn.
Can you alter my cloak? For this day and age, they may well grant access to the girl accused. I need to appear a nobleman now. Let all the light I reflect be diffused. A filter in time, my eyes, my voice, my brow.
Your portrait is painted, and now as we speak, I apply changes so ultra and cheek. No one will suspect you fell from the stars. I have crossed data, now from all sources Mars. Open your pocketbook. These answers you sought. The symbols. This girl is drowning in thought. Were the only evidence of life or birth. Found by an American astronaut. Never revealed to the public on Earth.
I see the page where the symbols are glowing. Is there a translation or some way of knowing? How did this girl get a lock on my zone bind? I thought this your secret. Unknown to mankind.
Much is revealed at the moment of death. This girl was tortured so close to last breath. The plot that awaits you is hidden from me. Let me download the data. I now can see. This castle belongs to King James I. He believes this girl is bedeviled and cursed. One guest is honored, your nemesis now. Seek him out and curtail his power somehow. Matthew Hopkins, the infamous witch finder. He gave the orders to snatch her and bind her. One light appears on your road to this slaughter. The girl in chains is the king's darkling daughter. And use this to bend any future you bring. On this night, there are schemes to vanish the king.